from the Rule Zero Studios in High Bar Zoom, this is Rule Zero, the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. All games, all gaming, all the time. Welcome to the conversation.
Welcome back to the Rule Zero podcast. I'm Chris, and I've been frozen in carbonite for 1 year.
And I'm Pete, and I've been circling the event horizon of the black hole.
Well, I'm glad you're back, Pete.
I'm glad I'm back, too. I'm glad you're back, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you. I go away for a while, and everybody starts having delusions of grandeur.
And by the time I get out of it, the Commonwealth has fallen, and my second-in-command was the traitor all along.
Who knew?
I know.
All right. Well, there you go.
Freaking Nietzscheans. Okay. So
we've been pretty busy. We've been over at our place, we've been kind of too busy gaming to talk about gaming.
That's one of those great ironies.
Yeah, we've been talking about fantasy movies on our brand new podcast, Dragon Reel.
Yes, indeed.
And Sharon is helping us with that, and Pete is also on it. And the three of us have made two episodes so far. We're about to make our third. Our first episode was about Aragorn, and the second episode was about the movie Dragon Slayer. It is a fantasy movie discussion podcast.
And I'm really kind of proud of what we've accomplished so far, considering we've only gotten two out.
Yeah, and we've got like a lot of feedback from Facebook. A couple people are responding.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. So
oh, and RZP also broke 100 likes on Facebook.
Yes, I noticed that. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
So go over to dragonreel.com and check out our podcast. You can follow that one on Twitter at twitter.com/dragonreel. And facebook.com/dragonreel, and you can email requests into dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com for that one. So that's going well, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited.
And I have also appeared on a couple other podcasts, mostly.
Oh, have you now?
I have. I guested. I was gaming with a fellow who runs another podcast called The Roundtable, and he invited me to do a playtest of high-level play for Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition.
Nice.
We're going to talk a bit about D&D 5e in the main talk, but this was a high-level playtest. It was called the Tarrasque Takedown, and you can search for that on YouTube. And you'll find the unexpurgated copy and the edited down version, depending on, you know, how much patience you have to listen to other people play a game.
I think you tweeted that one also.
Yeah, and it's got visual to it because we played it on a D20.
Nice.
And we also did a Tiamat takedown.
Oh, fun! Wow. Heavy hitters.
With we had an extra person for the Tiamat game, but in neither one of those went very well for us. I'm not going to completely spoil it, but there was a lot of death. And
okay, and you were on other podcasts, which just goes to show the audience that you're not the man I married.
I didn't realize you married me, but there you go. You know, they say the husband is always the last to know.
It's true.
I also guested on the Tome Show. Just recently, but that one's not out yet. That was a Valentine's Day episode about couples gaming, and Sharon and I both went on that to talk about how we about our experience gaming for 20 years as a married couple.
Nice.
So that was fun.
Even though most of the gaming that you did as a couple was you running and her playing?
Yeah, that actually came up. But we have played on the same side of the table.
No, I know you have. I know you have.
Yeah. But I mean, mostly at cons, but there's been a couple games where we were both players.
Well, to think, if I ever move back down to Maryland, or you guys move to where I am at the time, I'll run for you.
Excellent. You know, you've run two one-session games that we didn't actually get very far in for us.
Well, unfortunately, they were both interrupted by by real life coming in and smacking me in the head.
One of them was interrupted by you moving out of the state.
Yes, and the other one was interrupted by my mom's dementia getting so bad that we actually had to have an intervention.
Yes. And yes. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it happens.
But, so that was what I've been doing. How about yourself?
I've just been really, really busy working with said mom and being a dad. And just, that's pretty much it, really. I've been really kind of crazy busy just trying to keep up with my kids. Mm-hmm. They're both of them are in high school, so I have to make sure that they all both need to be where they are supposed to be at the time they need to be there, and things like that. So it's been a logistic fun time.
You had to step away from gaming for a while, right?
I have stepped away from gaming for a while. We did a couple of one-shots and a couple of minis. Most of the gaming I've been doing is just tabletop type stuff, card games and board games.
Yeah, we've been doing that a lot. We've we joined a local group when we moved recently, and we joined a group in our new town, this gaming group, and we met this other couple at this gaming group, and we've been gaming nearly every Friday night with them. So.
There you go.
Playing, you know, mostly playing board games. We just started a Changeling game, so that's cool.
Now I've been doing a boatload of Flux, Cards Against Humanity, a game called Ghost Pirates.
Cool.
Red Dragon Inn. Mm-hmm. Trying to think what else. I'm looking over at my bookcase from time to time to see if I can jar memory. I have a game called Koi Pond. I've been playing quite a bit of that. And then we've also been doing besides Red Dragon and Arkham Horror. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it. Lords of Waterdeep is the only other thing I've played recently.
I really like Red Dragon Inn. The only problem I have with it is the elimination aspect of it. Because you know, the first person to go out is going to sit there staring at everybody else having fun. You know, mm-hmm. unless he can go in the other room where the rest of the party is playing Cards Against Humanity, which is what happened the last gaming party we had. So people slowly trickled
King
into the room.
That's the other thing I've been playing a lot of.
What's that?
King of Tokyo. That was the thing. The reason why that jarred my memory is because the first time I played it was at a friend's house where he has three tables set up with three different games going on.
Awesome.
So if you got eliminated from Red Dragon Inn, you could come over and see what was going on at
King of Tokyo
and things like that. So.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's kind of how our Cards Against Humanity game went at the gaming party last May. Mm-hmm. And we also had a party. We had a I have the day after Thanksgiving off.
Oh, okay.
From my company. Mm-hmm. So we had a Thanksgiving party.
Nice.
So everybody was going. Everybody had obligations on Thanksgiving Day. Many of our friends were local. These obligations mm-hmm. were local. So I said, well, how about most of my friends are off on Friday, like me. So mm-hmm. why don't we have a gaming party? You know, after everybody is all done with their family obligations, we can get together and you know actually have some fun.
Oh, that's nice.
So we did that.
That's really cool.
So we had Thanksgiving, but Thanksgiving created another problem.
Which was?
Well, I would like to have a holiday party for every holiday, but I can't think of a proper portmanteau for most of the other holidays.
You have such a first world problem.
Yes. So I mean, I can't come up. I mean, you know, St. Gamerick's Day. No, that doesn't really work.
That's a little rough.
Yeah. So that's the problem. And so, I mean, I can't just, you know, make up a half-assed portmanteau.
What about if you called it Rule-tide?
Oh, my God, Pete!
And then...
You're a genius. You know, the best we could come up with for Christmas was Deck the Halls.
Oh, that's not bad.
But you have to actually, you know, do something visual for that. You know, you have to show a deck of cards for that.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, Deck the Halls was not compelling enough for me to actually have the party and clean the house.
No, I think Rule-tide is a good one.
That is awesome.
I'm glad I could give it to you.
You just throw these things out there like they're nothing.
It's just my gift.
All right. So we have been playing a lot of 5th edition D&D, and we are going to talk about our experiences with that after the cut.
This is the heart of the matter.
And we're back. And this episode on the heart of the matter, we are going to talk about Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. Wizards of the Coast finally released after what seemed like 2 years of playtesting.
Yes.
I believe it was.
I also find it interesting that they decided to go with 5th Edition instead of Next.
Well, if they call it Next, then what happens when they have to make another edition?
After.
I always got the impression that Next was sort of a working title and that it was always going
to
be.
You know what it could be? It could be D&D Next, D&D Then, D&D Also, and then finally D&D As Well As.
Yeah, that kind of gets a little weighty on the tongue.
Oh, you're no fun anymore.
That's my favorite episode of Monty Python.
Mine too.
They came out with 5th edition. I'm not sure exactly what month it was. It was before Christmas. Oh, it was Gen Con, like we said.
It was Gen Con.
2 years ago we predicted Gen Con 2014. And guess what? Gen Con
2014.
So, called it. You heard it here first, folks.
Nailed it.
We win. What do we win? We win nothing.
We win your joy and admiration.
Yes.
Yes.
And I've been playing it, and it took a very long time for the Dungeon Master Guide to come out, and to be honest, I didn't really need it. I mean, it's got a lot of good stuff in it, but I could have played with just the Player's Handbook and the Monster Manual.
Now, I have to tell you that I don't have the DMG.
Uh-huh.
I just have the Player's Handbook and the Monster Manual.
Yeah, there's some good advice for things like kit bashing.
Right.
And, I mean, it's really good advice for kit bashing. It's you know, saying, hey, you know, what we've given you is just a skeleton of a game frame of a game framework, and you really right. should be adding to it yourself. You should make this game your own. And I think that's sort of a revolutionary thing for 5th edition.
I think that's a revolutionary thing ever since the middle of 2nd edition.
Well, the thing is, everybody's been doing it. You know, since D&D came out, everybody's had their own house rules.
But it's true.
This is the first edition that has actively said, here's how you make house rules, you know, and go for it.
I think I seem to recall in the original AD&D DMG, Gary coming out and saying, hey, look, you know, this ultimately has to be your own.
Right.
What I'm providing you with in this book is just gobs and gobs of useful information. You know? And it is. I mean, the original DMG is probably one of the best fantasy resources in the world. Because mm-hmm. it has not only just different kinds of poisons, it has all the, like, it has that entire list of gems and their supposed mystical benefits, you know, and how do you address the person who's above the con, you know, and stuff like that. There's all sorts of really, really good stuff in there.
Right.
You know, besides the damage matrices and tables and the treasure tables and things like that, there's just this really wonderful...
And potion miscability, don't forget that.
But
I mean, yeah, there was always the statement in the game saying these are a framework, and mm-hmm. what doesn't work for you, I mean, that's what Rule Zero means, you know. Yeah. What doesn't work at your table, don't use that, you don't have to.
Right.
You know,
well,
but
Rule Zero is have fun,
right?
And above all else, that's why we play games,
right?
So
but yeah, I mean, this one is actually giving you steps on how to change things.
That's nice. I like that. Yeah. And the reason why I bring this up is because I got the Hexcrawl bug early, or I should say late last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I put together a Hexcrawl for my son and one of his friends, and we were only able to play it once, and we were using 3-5 rules.
Okay.
And then when it became obvious that the friend wasn't going to be able to play, we revamped it so that it was a 5th edition. And then after he and I sat down and talked about the combat and the magic for a while, we decided to go back to do 3-5, just because it's going to flow a little bit easier, just because I'm familiar with 3-5 more than I am with 5th.
Right.
If I'm going to do 5th, I want to do a party. I want to do a mini campaign.
Sure.
So,
well, 5th edition, as written, is much more streamlined, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simplistic. And it has a lot of room for, you know, local, you know, for add-ons for DMs to use and players to create themselves.
Nice.
The main problem that I have with it is that, well, I have shelves and shelves of books in other gaming systems. And one
yes.
thing I like about that's out with Pathfinder right now is the breadth of options.
Mm-hmm.
And 5th edition is way too young to have that breadth of options, but I feel like even within the Player's Handbook, there's a very mm-hmm. limited number of options.
Okay.
I would have liked to have seen more ways to build characters.
Okay.
Within the initial rules.
Right.
But they just released an Eberron expansion for free on the website, on Wizards
nice.
Of the Coast website, and it has rules for what were the people that made magic items.
I don't remember. The only thing I remember from Eberron is the Warforged.
Okay, I think they have Warforged in that. And it's the Artificer is the name
yes.
of the class.
Yes.
Sorry about that. And so they've got rules for that, and it's a wizard class. So instead of making a whole new class, they've made it a school for wizardry.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
So you're building on the same rules. You know, you get your right. advantages at the same levels. There's the same kind of advantages.
Right.
So they fit it into the class that already exists. So that's really cool.
Well, my Hexcrawl is a Planescape Hexcrawl. So I needed, one of the things that my son had voiced an opinion on was that he wanted to do a gatecrasher. And so I had to make a gatecrasher variant of a thief, or of a rogue. Because there was already thief and assassin and arcane trickster. So I just created gatecrasher from that, and kind of spaced it out a little bit, pieced it out a little bit. I went on a lot of forums to look up what other people had come up with.
Yeah, you know, I like
backgrounds and for.
I like some of the things that I've seen for kit bashing in the games so far. After the Tiamat fight, I made up a Dragon Slayer class and I posted it on the 5th edition Facebook group.
Nice.
And I got lots of feedback on that. And somebody pointed out that I had basically nullified a feat. And I went back to my paper and I went, oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, fix that. So, you know, it's like home game design. You know, I would accept this, someone playing this version of the fighter in my game.
Right.
You know, because I made it up.
Oh, yeah. No, I dig it.
Yeah. So, the basic premise is still the same. You've got the same things that I think are always going to be in D&D, and that is the iconic classes.
Right.
Levels. Concepts like hit points.
Right. And XP and...
Yeah. And not quite cast and forget magic.
I'm still kind of, excuse me, iffy about the magic.
About the way the magic in 5th edition works?
Yes.
So is Jim. And I kind of like it. Because one of the things that, you know, was always a problem with with spellcasting for me before is that you always have to know exactly how many of every spell you'll want to prepare.
Right.
But I kind of like the idea of having a few prepared and being able to cast any of the ones you have prepared as many times as, you know, as you have spell slots.
Right.
Which is slightly different from Vancian magic, which is cast and forget.
Mm-hmm.
But a little more versatile, like the 3rd edition sorcerer. It's like a 3rd edition sorcerer who changes his spell selection every day.
Yes.
And that's also great. Introduced the concept in this... Do go on.
I said I like the way you summed that up. That's a good summation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
They also added the concept in 5th edition of variant level spells. Like you've got Cure Wounds. Rather than having Cure Light Wounds, Cure Moderate Wounds, Cure Serious Wounds, Cure Critical Wounds, Cure Hilarious Wounds. I don't know, whatever else you got.
Eel!
You've only got one spell called Cure Wounds. And you can cast that at any level, and it's a D8 per level of spell slot that you're using, which is something that is long overdue, in my opinion.
I concur.
They had something like it in one of the third-party, third-edition supplements called Way of the Witch. I reviewed that on Amazon. But the way that was supposed to work in that book was a little unclear.
Okay.
So this is pretty clear. This is saying exactly what the difference in level makes.
Okay, so you have been playing... How long have you been playing with your current party?
We have been playing this... Well, I've played in other people's games. I played in a game that Mike Shea was running.
Sly Flourish.
Yeah, Sly Flourish. Shout out to you. He and his wife, Michelle, were hosting a game. And Mike was running. And Sharon and I were playing in it with a couple other people. And we played through the Lost Mines of Phandelver story.
Okay.
And we played through... I'm blanking on the other adventure that we played. But a different game. So we played in two different games. So I've played more than I've run.
Oh, okay.
And I took the old basic D&D starter module, B2, the Keep on the Borderlands. And I am running that as a 5th edition module.
Nice.
So I had my regular Saturday group, we're taking a break from our Pathfinder game because I started taking a bunch of classes and I just don't have the time to make crap up all the time.
Right.
So we're taking a break from Pathfinder and we're playing Keep on the Borderlands. So they all started at second level because the thing about 5th edition is that the game really begins at 3rd level.
Yes.
First level...
Which was kind of 3rd edition's thing too.
I think 3rd edition had... You felt like you were playing the same game at every level.
Fair enough.
I mean, it didn't feel like the game changed.
Okay.
You were playing the character that you designed.
Right.
Early on. But okay. In 5th edition, you kind of... You go through the first two levels, and it just feels kind of automatic. Like, you have to go through the first two levels to actually start playing the game. It's like a tutorial that's in every... It's like going through... It's like starting a new game of Skyrim, where you've got that 45-minute cutscene...
Right.
You could just walk away from. And yeah, come was, back to when it's time
back,
to make up
back
your character.
In the old City of Heroes, they had the training tutorial.
Uh-huh.
Where you had to go in and fight your way through one of the cordoned off areas of the city, and then once you passed to that, you know, you were sent to into Paragon to knock heads together and otherwise, you know, brutalize for justice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like once you get to third level, most of the classes, all of the classes by third level, you have made the choice of what kind of that class you're going to be.
Right, what's your subtype or whatever they call it.
Right.
Is.
Yeah. A couple of the classes, that happens at second level, but by third level, everybody has made that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So I really kind of feel like the game begins then. The game really begins at third level.
Okay, and good point.
If I were to start another game with people who have played before...
5th edition or D&D in general?
5th edition.
Okay.
Then I would start them at third level. Because they know what they want to play. They don't want to go through the tutorial again.
Okay.
One thing we've been doing with the Keep on the Borderlands is this module's been sitting in on my shelf for over 30 years, and I haven't picked it up in about that long.
Wow.
So I kind of like... Well, they said that 5th edition is trying to recapture the feeling of earlier editions when... people were a little bit more flexible with what they were doing.
Right.
And I wanted to see if I could adapt this old module to 5th edition. So what I've basically been doing is running it straight out of the module, but going to the 5th edition monster manual for stats of monsters.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
One thing that is a major change is, well, they ran into a tribe of gnolls.
Right.
And gnolls in 1st edition had 2 hit dice, and since that was randomly rolled in every module, that always meant they had somewhere between 2 and 16 hit points, but usually what they had was like 9 or 10.
Right, yeah.
In 5th edition, they have 22.
Oh, there you go.
And nice. damage is not that high. I mean, it's not as high as it was in 3rd and 4th edition.
Well, it's weapon-based, isn't it?
Right, well, yeah, but it's... You in 3rd edition and 4th edition, a lot of the game was getting extra pluses out of every angle you could get.
Right, yes.
Those things are just not there in 5th edition.
Oh, gotcha.
So when you swing your sword, you're doing your weapon damage plus your strength or dex modifier, but you're not going... I mean, because the game starts out with fairly low stats for the array that they give you, you're probably doing your die plus up to 4.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So, gnolls are not possessed of great strength?
Gnolls hit pretty hard.
Okay.
Well, it's not that they hit pretty hard, it's that they take a lot of hits from a second-level party, or a third-level party.
Okay.
So, they went through the Goblin Cave first, and they just slaughtered everybody. They went through the Hobgoblin Cave next, and it says if, you know, in the module it says if this thing happens and then this thing happens, these creatures are just going to leave the caves. And so they went in the back entrance of the Hobgoblin Cave and got to the leader first.
Oh.
And it says if the leader is killed, the rest of the Hobgoblins are going to leave. So they did.
Oh, okay. There you go.
But in that fight, they almost had a total party kill.
Wow.
Because it is really easy to die in 5th edition.
That's great. I like the fear of God people like that.
Yeah. So I was a little bit disappointed in the way they were approaching this cave experience.
Right, you and I had talked about that.
Yeah. So what they were doing was they were basically just going into they were kicking in doors and rolling initiative.
Right. They were just playing murder hobos. They weren't actually playing adventurers.
Right.
Right.
And it was a little bit distressing to me because I told them at one point, you guys aren't really approaching this with a lot of imagination, and that's why you were almost lost.
Right.
And they continued into the next cave and kind of did the same thing.
Okay.
And I thought, I don't really know what to do about this.
Right.
And it's not that I want them to try to parley with every monster, because I don't want that.
Obviously not.
You know, I want them to show... I wanted to get them to show some interest in the game rather than just feeling like it was an automatic, you know, move over here, roll a die, move over here, roll a die. And we got into a fight that was really big with all the gnolls. Mm-hmm. And we were going around the table a few times, and I really felt like my players are not interested.
Right.
They're going around the table, picking up a die, rolling it, looking at it, and either, you know, groaning or just giving me a number. But when mm-hmm. when they hit, they weren't excited about it.
Okay.
And I kind of felt this was partly because they didn't seem to be approaching it with as anything other than open a door, roll initiative.
Right, other than a mechanical
right
means of going about. Well, when you and I talked about it, I had mentioned hitting their flaws, their motivations, and their beliefs.
Yeah. that is an inherent part of 5th edition, but, I mean, to be honest, some of this stuff doesn't really come up in a combat.
And I'm not asking that to be the case. I'm just saying that if you want to get them engaged, you've got to give them a little grist.
Yeah. And when they go back to the keep, they are engaged.
Okay, so I mean
they are playing characters when they're amongst other humanoids that are speaking to them. And that's fine, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
That's kind of what I want. And the funny thing is, like I said, I've played this module. This is the first module I ever played in.
Right. Same as anyone, I think, of our age group.
Right. And I always went through the caves. Because I played this thing when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12.
Right.
Maybe 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall ever interacting with the keep at all. I always remember, okay, pick a letter A through K. Because when you're 12 and 13 and you've got, you know, all of this mm-hmm. magic treasure to recover from these monsters, that's what you're going to do. You don't care about the people.
No, it's a money hole.
Yeah, you don't care about the people in the keep. They don't have treasure.
Right.
Well, they do, but it would be rude to take it from them.
Well, unless they are evil.
Right. So I read through the keep probably for the first time ever, because I don't recall reading this when I was 10.
Wow.
Or 11, rather. And so I found that there's this angle of this evil priest who's in the keep, who's, if he finds out that the players are going to the caves, he will tell the party that he wants to go with them, and mm-hmm. that he will betray them at the most convenient moment. So they got him to go, you know, they happened to find this guy in town right before they went to the Knoll Cave, and then they got in trouble in the Knoll Cave, and I went, you know, this is the moment when this priest is going to flip.
And
so he did.
And?
He wiped out the party last night.
You got a TPK?
I did not get a TPK.
Oh, good.
I got a TPS.
You got a TPKO.
Yes, a TPKO. That's exactly it.
Gotcha.
I was going with S for subdual.
Right.
But a knockout is good.
Yes. Fantastic. And you got the whole party.
Oh, yeah, we got the whole party.
Oh, they're losing junk. That's fantastic. God, I love it when shit like that happens.
So I think they learned a valuable lesson, which is...
Our GM sucks!
Which is their GM sucks.
Yeah, well, maybe next time you'll have to put them up against the grandmas and kitties.
Yeah. the valuable lesson was never get involved in a land war in Asia.
No, that's one of the classic blunders, okay?
Right. Also, never hire an evil NPC.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. So
right.
So I happen to know, I have the kind of brain wherein I remember modules very, very well.
Uh-huh.
And I remember Keep on the Borderlands, and I remember that in the caves there is... Should we give the spoiler? Do your people listen to us?
I think giving a spoiler on a 40-year-old module is kind of okay.
Okay, there's an evil temple deep down inside the caves.
Exactly.
Which is kind of cool, because it gives you that kind of introduces you to the whole idea of an actual dungeon master or a dungeon keeper, in that this cleric wants to be able to worship his dark god without too much interference.
Yeah.
And so it brings a lot of like-minded critters into the fold to act as the distraction.
Yes.
to keep people out of it until he wants to bring people down and sacrifice them to his evil dark gods.
Right, and a lot of this is not really expressly said in the module, mm-hmm. but there's also no reason for all of these creatures to be hanging out in the same ravine unless they're there to worship at the evil temple.
And get paid by the cleric.
Right.
And or get paid by the cleric.
Right.
They're close enough to a spot that they can do, you know, as I recall, the caves are very close to a highway, so they have their pickings of raiding and bringing.
Yeah, that's how I brought the party into it. I hired them as caravan guards and then had goblins attack them on the road.
There you go. So
that's how I kind of tied them into the fact that the caves were there, and I had them all make up a character in the keep that they knew.
Yes.
So I gave them a little bit of a thing that was not in the module. You know, like, you guys help me make up something here that you are a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, being there, I figured that the cleric was part of the evil cult that mm-hmm. was working in the temple there.
Nice.
So when he subdued them all, I had them all wake up with one hit point.
Nice.
Bound, gagged, and ready for sacrifice in the temple that's hidden deep within the caves.
Yay! How exciting! That's so cool.
So they were an orc priest came in,
yes,
and was going to help prepare the sacrifice, and they were told to go and fetch stout warriors. So the orc priest went back to his orc tribe, which is a couple caves over.
Yes.
And came back with an orc that the party had freed in the previous episode.
Ah.
The previous game session.
Gotcha.
And one of the players is playing a half-orc.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And the half-orc, who freed the orc prisoner,
right,
gave him a dagger to help him get home safe.
Nice.
And the orc told the half-orc, you know, this... Actually, I just kind of stole from this episode of Next Generation.
Okay.
Where Worf meets Klingons for the first time.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I basically stole that dialogue.
Nice.
So the orc was saying, you know, don't deny your nature, brother.
Right.
You know that the battle is within your blood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and these are all the things that the other Klingons were telling Worf on The Next Generation.
Right.
So I basically stole that as him trying to get this half-orc to stop being a paladin and start acting more like an orc.
Right.
But, you know, he said, here's a dagger. This'll see you home. So this orc was one of the guards who was going to carry him to the altar for sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And managed, and, you know, that orc chose, you know, the half-orc paladin as the first sacrifice. And when he picked him up, he said, I owe you my life. What mm-hmm. is your command?
Oh, blood debt.
And when he got to the altar, mm-hmm. I had that orc freed prisoner say, I invoke the blood oath. And I had the other orcs act surprised, but the orc priest nodded.
Uh-huh.
And then the orc priest healed the party as they were being freed. And they killed the two priests that were about to sacrifice them.
Huh, okay.
So that's how that episode ended. Oh, and I described the temple as being an altar of a seated, horned demon-like god with two giant rubies for eyes.
Nice.
And holding a burning brazier.
PHB.
Yes. So I basically described the cover of the first edition player's handbook.
Right.
As the scene for the temple.
Fun.
And I let them get those rubies after the fight was over.
Nice. I gotta tell you, I'm a little about how that all played out, but...
Well, so am I, but, I mean, at a certain point, I was like...
But did it engage them once they woke up with only one
did.
Hit point?
It did!
Good. See, it was, you gotta shake shit up sometimes. Sorry.
I was completely leading, and I kind of felt like they don't really have any choices up at this point.
And somebody got angry!
And Sharon got angry that they didn't have choices.
And that is kind of a bad place to be, and that's why I was saying that I'm kind of about it. But the flip side to that is that, you know...
They didn't die.
They also need a leader. They need somebody who's going to take point.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So
that is true.
You know, if this might be a good example to them to say, maybe you guys need a leader. I mean, at one point... The longest campaign I ever ran was my Invisible Sun campaign, which some of the members of that gamed with you for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest problem that they were having was they didn't have a leader. So I conscripted one, basically. Mm-hmm. I made her the child of a prophecy, and from that point on, she was the leader. Mm-hmm. And everybody followed her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it worked out great.
I will, you know what, I'm going to do that. So, I'm going to address someone as the party leader then.
Yeah, and I think that's what you kind of need to do. If they're not going to pick one, then you got to bring one in.
Well, one thing that happened was in that fight,
yes,
they felt like they were role-playing now. Good. Suddenly, it was no longer we're going around the table rolling dice.
Nice.
When they got freed, they were invested in the fight. They hated the bad guys. They wanted blood, and they wanted to roll well, and they wanted to do the damage, and they wanted to be at the table.
Because they spoke to us in common.
That's good. I mean, I think that's
saying because they spoke common.
Wah. So.
When you don't have language, it's hard to roleplay.
So anyway, but yeah, I don't know. I feel like my big interest in 5th edition was that I wanted to see more elements of what I had attracted me to the indie side of gaming over the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, see that kind of brought into the fray. And in a way it did, but from the way you're describing play, I still feel it's missing something.
I kind of agree with you, but I think what it's missing is for me to have created a compelling adventure.
Oh, so you're saying that because you came out of the gate with a module, that's wherein the problem was lying.
I think so. Because yeah. I think if they had, and in fact, even Lost Minds of Phandelver, the mm-hmm. players start with ties to the characters in the module.
Right.
And that's kind of where I got the idea to do it with characters in the Keep, because, you know, the Phandelver story did it with characters in Phandelver.
Right.
So I wanted to give them some investment in the story, but I don't think it's enough, because...
Well, I think that part of it you need to threaten the people in the Keep more.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
I think that's part of it, so that they invest them with the adventure, and now that you've shown that there's an evil temple right on their doorstep, practically, mm-hmm. then that's something. You know, that's something that motivates people to action. They're not going to sit there and go, "Oh, really? Huh? How about that?"
Yeah, who knew? Oh
well. Yeah. So.
Yeah, you I guess, could be right. What do you feel is missing?
I don't. No, because one of the things that I always liked about Burning Wheel was the fact that you came out of the gate with three beliefs that were tied directly into the story that you and the GM and the other players had sparked.
Okay.
So it was very rare, you know, you really didn't get a lot of module type stuff. So I guess that's kind of it. The idea for me of tapping beliefs and flaws and stuff like that is something that should be usable at any point in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the flaws for the sorcerer, for Gwern, that I have is that he's not reliable to his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because, you know, if he was the rogue, if he was the one who could have gotten out of the ropes, you know,
uh-huh.
or whatever, to save the rest of the party, he would have saved himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or something like that. Yeah. Because he's unreliable like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then would he come back later because the guilt got the better of him? Would he run for help? Would mm-hmm. he just say, oh, well, you know, and have the orc have to come in and save them? Or, you know, what would happen?
So what do you think is missing?
So what I think is missing is the impetus to bring in beliefs and flaws and things like that from the very get-go. And I think that's why it's kind of necessary to take an older module like that and not just update parts of it. You actually have to retcon it for the edition.
Add these things, these hooks.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I tried to add these hooks, but they're not as compelling as I would like them to be.
Well, a lot of it is they give you so many gimme ones in the book. I think maybe the solution to that is what Mouseguard did, which was just come up with a belief and a... I can't remember what the other thing is. An ideal.
Yeah.
Come up with a belief in an ideal, you know, at the beginning of every adventure.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's unique to that adventure.
I don't think the ideals and bonds in the player's handbook are intended to be a comprehensive list. They're to get new players started. You know, by the time you've played your third character, you should be able to make up your own ideals and bonds and flaws.
Oh, and flaws and beliefs. But I think that in order to tap them effectively, you need to, like, sit down with the group ahead of time and say, okay, I want to run you guys and keep on the Borderlands.
Uh-huh.
You know, and what interests me about this is that it's a fringe community in, you know, a dangerous place.
Mm-hmm.
The whole reason why the keep is there and the Castellan's there is because the Duke back in Karamikos said he wanted to expand his territory. So this guy managed to fight his way up and create this keep and some of the lands behind it. But all this land forward, including the highway that runs through the wilderness, you know, is still unknown territory.
Are you extrapolating, or is this something that was in...
This is the sort of thing that I would say if I sat down with my group.
Okay.
And so I'd say, I'm going to run you guys in B2. What is interesting about B2 to you guys?
Okay.
You know, and then you can play off of each other more with what the bonds are and the ideals are and things like right. that.
Well, I pulled it out because I thought it would be quick. I thought it would be a quick introduction to the gaming system.
Right.
So I had people make up their own characters, etc.
And in and of itself, you're right. It has been a quick introduction.
Right.
But so that's all there was to it. There's no game in that. There's just the introduction.
Right.
You see?
And they've made it to fourth level now. And I think they're either going to, you know, wipe out the rest of the caves, or they're going to consider it a job well done, because they've pretty much killed all the gnolls, they've pretty much killed all the goblinoids,
mm-hmm.
and they've destroyed the main priest, the head priest of the evil temple.
Oh, okay.
So I think, you know, they may well consider this a job well done.
What if they did that, and then the bugbears and the other critters who are involved come knocking on their door?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're in a position of strength.
Right.
So they've eliminated...
They're at a position of perceived strength.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Even though twice they came really close to dying in combat. And if it hadn't been for the fact that they hired an evil cleric that was going to betray them, the gnolls would have killed them.
Yes.
Which is interesting.
Yes. Because
they were saved by the person who was stabbing them in the back at the same time that he was saving their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they also enjoyed the fact that, you know, even though basically from the time they were knocked unconscious to the time they were freed, it was basically a cutscene. They had no choices.
Right.
They enjoyed that because they were freed by actions that they had chosen earlier.
Yes, and that makes sense. It makes sense within the context of the adventure.
Right.
Right. That's great.
So that's why they felt that even though they were, you know, their agency was removed for a longer than most players are comfortable with, they were released from this lack of agency by their own choices.
Great. Cool.
Let's wrap it up.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right.
So if you want to get a hold of us, you can come to our website at rulezeropodcast.com. You can also check out our new podcast website, dragonreel.com.
Ooh, that's always nice.
Yes.
You can also email us at rulezeropodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Google+.
Or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/rulezeropodcast or follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/rulezeropodcast.
Or you can look me up on Twitter as rzpete.
And you can follow our Dragon Reel podcast as twitter.com/dragonreel. So I guess that's all we had to say.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So now that's it for me.
And that's it for me.
So until next time,
game on.
Game on. Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com.